This is a photo of a much younger me. I think I was 12 in that photo, and it was my first visit to the ocean. And as a young man, I learned some very valuable things. One, I learned that tuna didn't come from a can. That was very interesting. It was a very disturbing fact that lobster is boiled alive. I didn't like that as a 12-year-old. And we actually took a whale watching trip, and I learned that whales actually participate in the watching. They actually follow the whale watching boat, and they did tricks for us. But that ocean that I visited so many years ago, I won't tell you exactly. Does anybody have a guess when that photo was taken based on the size of my sister's hair?
83.
A little later than that, yes, but in the 80s, definitely. I think her hair is about the size of her face in that photo. But the ocean today is very different than the ocean I visited so many years ago. The legendary ocean researcher Sylvia Earle estimates that in the last 50 years that we've taken more than 90% of the big fish in the sea. Seafood Watch estimates that 90% of the world's fisheries are either fully fished out or in decline. We can't, or it's no longer sustainable, to take wild capture, to take our seafood from the ocean. So one of the ways that we've made up for that deficit is a tremendous increase in aquaculture, or farmed fish. In 1950, the FAO estimates that there was less than 1 million tons of production. This graph actually doesn't continue till the 2014 estimate, which is now 150 million tons of production. So that's a 150-fold increase since 1950. But one of the problems in sustainability is a tremendous amount in these very intensive aquaculture systems. What do we do with the fish waste? And this is what my project is about. An important technology which can turn this fish waste into a potential fertilizer. And it's called aquaponics. Aquaponics was invented, at least the modern style of aquaponics, was invented in the 1960s. And the word is a combination of aqua in aquaculture and ponics in hydroponics. It's a symbiotic system where you combine aquaculture, or the growing or raising of aquatic animals and plants for food, together with a hydroponic system in a continuously recirculating system. The system that I created, that I designed and built and created at Sam Houston State University, is a particular kind of aquaponic system called a flood and drain. It's also known as a media-filled bed. And in the illustration, if you look at the bottom, you'll see that you have a fish tank, and at intervals, there's a small pump which pumps the water up. It is then recirculated, or it drips through or percolates down through LECA, or it's a lightweight expanded clay aggregate, or in our case, we are actually using pea gravel, and the plants take up the nutrients provided in the system. The goal when I began to create this system was to first, I wanted the system to be low cost, because in the beginning, I actually financed the project, so that was of concern to me, low cost. The second, I wanted it to be modular, meaning that it could be expanded at a later date or scaled up. I wanted it to be off the shelf. One of the things I wanted somebody to be able to do is to take my plans that I made and be able to buy them, the supplies, at Home Depot or any local big box store. I wanted it to be easy to construct with simple tools and from the designs provided. And of course, most importantly, I wanted it to be able to grow both plants and fish. This is part, or phase one, was I took a program called SketchUp. You may be familiar with it, Google SketchUp. It's now Trimble SketchUp. And I did some three-dimensional plans. And I based these plans on the dimensional lumber that you can buy from your local Home Depot. These are the plans that I made, three-dimensional plans. It made it easier to build. The plans are detailed. This is part of the modular design. There's independent valves for each one of the different media-filled beds that allowed us to experiment with different media and different beds. This is the design process again. And this is the system constructed and installed in the lower greenhouse before the planting phase. And notice two things in the photograph. In the bottom left hand, you'll see the fish tank. And in the top right, you'll see the monster. You don't see the monster in that picture in the top? Oh, I mean monster the drink. You know, that's very necessary for many undergraduates to complete their projects. You can see it in the corner there. So this is the system constructed. This is my first salad out of the system. It tasted much better than any salad I had ever bought at the store because I took it out of my aquaponic system. This is a photo of the roots growing in the pea gravel. And this is an aquaponic secret weapon, worms. The worms actually thrive in the media bed. And when we would pull up the plants, you would often find a worm attached in the system. We added these into the system. These are red wigglers. How do we convert the waste in an aquaculture system into nitrates or things that can be taken up by plants? The first part of the process, if you've ever had a regular aquarium, you know that you can't stock it at a high density because what happens is you'll have ammonia build up in the system, which is fish toxic. But what happens is nitrifying bacteria first convert the ammonia to nitrites, which are then converted eventually into nitrates. And the nitrates can be taken up by the plants. So to determine whether the system is successfully fulfilling this conversion process, we needed to measure during the cycling process. Actually, there were two parts of the project. The first part of the project was what's called cycling a new tank. What you see is that in the beginning, we have high levels of ammonia. Levels of 3 of ammonia is fish toxic. But then the ammonia starts to dip, and we begin to see the rise of nitrites in the system as Nitrosomonas bacteria begin to convert the ammonia into nitrites. Then you'll see the nitrates begin to rise in the third part of the cycling process as the Nitrobacter begins to convert the nitrites into nitrates. And in a mature system, this is phase 1 in our observations by week. In the mature system, what you want to see is you want to see consistently low levels of ammonia, consistently low levels of nitrites, and consistently high levels of nitrates. And so what you'll see is we have consistently high levels of nitrates, we have ammonia below level 1, and only by about week 9 do we have a dip in the nitrates, and that's because we had a lot of vegetative growth from our tomato, so the tomatoes were sucking up all the nitrates. I originally had this as a series of graphs, but I thought it's much more illustrative to show some photos of the plant growth we were able to achieve in the system. This is butter crunch lettuce at week 0. The transplanted height was about 2 to 3 inches. And this is just 3 weeks later. It's taking over the bed and you have several salads worth of growth. This is chard. It's not a particularly informing picture, but it's about the same height. You have about 2 to 3 inches. And this is week 3, so it's overtaking the bed. Chard grows very well in an aquaponic system. One of the things that grows too well almost is basil. So I had to find all kinds of things to do with basil. Basil butter, basil bread, basil. Also mint grew very prolifically in the system. So this is week 0. And this is week 3, the same basil plant 3 weeks later. And that's some kale in the background. These are tomato plants. This is week 0. And this is week 3. Tomato plants had a lot of internodal elongation because they had very high levels of nitrates, so they kind of grew like crazy, even reaching up all the way to the top of the greenhouse eventually. This is just 3 weeks of growth. And also I grew peppers in the system. Peppers did well. I grew green bell peppers. This is week 0 of the transplanted plant. This is week 3. And recently we also added what we call strawberry towers. They haven't been put into operation yet, but they're done through a drip system. And you can see them in that photo. And I think this slide is very illustrative because it kind of gives you an idea of the entire system at week 0 at the time of transplant and 3 weeks later. So here's week 0 or week 1, and that's week 3. So I've got a lot of salads and a lot of basil bread. So this is week zero and week three. These are some things that I've successfully grown in the system. Bell peppers. In the middle, you'll see what's called an ichabean eggplant. It's a Japanese eggplant. I used to live in China. I ate many of those kinds of eggplants. They're very good. In the right-hand side, you'll see kale and some various green leafy vegetables during a harvest. We also, banana peppers grew well in the system. They went from about 1 inch to full size in about a week and a half. And there are some tomatoes we harvested from the system. In conclusion, some of my goals were first to spend not very much of my money. So the whole build cost was under $500. It was modular. In other words, having the independent beds allowed us to experiment with different media, and also with we were able to control the water flow to the different beds. Our system was easy to construct. It doesn't take very long to make one of those. Even the black part of the system is just a mortar mixer from a regular Home Depot. And viable, we grew a wide variety of plants while maintaining a healthy fish population. And I'd like to give some thanks to my professors. This is Mr. Kugler. He helped me in the beginning of the project. This is Ms. Fry and Dr. Pancook, who's in attendance today, and Dr. Lane. And I'm sorry I used their photos without permission. I tried to find the most attractive photos of them. Without their help, none of this would have been possible. And I'd be super happy to take any questions you have about my project or aquaponics in general. Thank you. Actually, unfortunately, we didn't. We started out with goldfish in the system because when a system is cycling, they have a much higher probability of death. But we hope to either do tilapia we were doing a scaled-up version of this project, and hopefully we want to do tilapia so that, yes, I can eat the fish.
Yeah, I was wondering what the ratio of the input to the fish is, the output of the veggies, how that fertilizer input works.
Well, one of the first things that we wanted to do in this project was first to just kind of assess the viability in terms of, does this system work and does it operate as an aquaponic system? Some of those other things in terms of looking at the conversion ratios we plan to do in the future with a bigger scaled up system. So we're putting this in a new greenhouse that's right next to the older greenhouse, and we've got some university funding now. So that's one of the things that we can certainly look at in the future. I would say that this is, she's talking about comparing the other known systems such as hydroponics to aquaponics. I'd say this is a very large concern. One of the difficulties in aquaponics is scaling up the system to commercial size. Aquaponics systems such as the media-filled bed, these kind of systems work very, very well in terms of backyard systems. But problems in terms of nutrient deficiencies and controlling certain nutrients within the system is a problem in aquaponics. And so there are very few commercial scale operations that are successful, and most of those are in Australia, where they've had some of the longest time to develop those systems. So for example, NFT or nutrient film technique is one system that's actually used in aquaponics. And there are some large scale operations in Australia that use nutrient film technique, but their profitability actually comes from the fish, not from the horticulture side. So most of the people who are successfully using aquaponics, it's almost secondary in terms of profit. The aquaponics part of it is the horticulture part is not necessarily the most profitable part, but the processing of the fish waste is a kind of secondary benefit in aquaculture. I don't know if that answers your question completely, but yes.
I used to work in fisheries, and just two questions, one about the fish aspect and one about the plant aspect. The plant aspect, for any kind of commercial sale, one of the critical things is that monitoring for bad things. For example, how are you monitoring for salmonella or amoebas or any of this type of accidental contamination? Because as you know, all you need is one food poisoning incident and it's a disaster. So what is, they look, the plants look healthy. Is there an aspect of monitoring that you've done or plan to do so you can actually check to make sure that there isn't this kind of contamination? Because even in the best, cleanest organic farming, there have been some massive outbreaks unexpectedly from sprouts, from lettuce, from baby tomatoes, of unexpected pathogens.
I think that's a very good question, and I visited several aquaponics operations in Texas, and I asked them about testing for pathogens. And as far as I know, and both of them are a licensed organic that I visited, they're not currently testing for pathogens. I think that would certainly be a good area of research.
Well, it might be a good idea because some of the most fatal outbreaks in U.S. history have happened organic.
Yeah, certainly.
Illinois, the sprouts.
Yeah, I would agree that would definitely be a concern in this kind of system.
And just a second question on fisheries. I used to work in fisheries, and we need aquaculture. We really do, because of the outlaid because of the oceans being fished out. But one of the critical problems is that it is the spacing, and in order for it to be profitable, it's very difficult not to crowd fish and shellfish, but the problem is they do get pathogens and parasites. People really don't want that in their food, even if they can't directly infect humans. Is the fisheries element, have you looked at density? I see you do it for the chemicals, you're testing ammonia and nitrates, but what about the fish flesh itself? I mean, have you noticed or been able to monitor any sort of fish health type of aspects?
Well, the fish weren't our primary concern. One of the things that we had difficulty with, believe it or not, is we had an animal come into our greenhouse and actually start killing the fish, which was fish health issue. But I think that I didn't see any observable signs of illness, but that certainly doesn't mean that the fish population was extremely healthy, I would say. And they do have recommended stocking densities. But I would say in general, and I think this is one of the reasons why I wanted to do research on aquaponics, is there really isn't enough research about, in a sense, extending aquaponics to the commercial level. And I think that's why the more universities that could implement these systems and do better testing could really make aquaponics more viable. Because I think that in terms of problems like you're discussing, there haven't been really good solutions, and there are only a handful of, like I said, large-scale commercial operations. And the people who sometimes write these stocking density recommendations, they're not necessarily based on good science. It's just practices that have worked for certain people under certain circumstances.
There are no further questions.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.